Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Games About Glory. I'm your host, Steph, and I should say a co-host, because the other illustrious person on this pod, who does probably more work than I do on a weekly basis to bring it together, is with me tonight, and it's Milo. It's just the two of us, isn't it?
Hi, Steph. Yeah, unfortunately, hello, Gareth is... Well, family, I think. I think family got in the way. very excitable children and in-laws over. So he had to bail at the last minute, unfortunately. But he'll be back soon.
We will miss Gareth, as we miss all of the people who help make the Games About Glory what it is. But you've got both of us, and we're feeling pretty cheerful and upbeat, I've got to tell you. And in that frame, I'm going to now ask Milo a question which I'm sure he'll flat bat away. Mate, which Spurs player would you most like to be take the Premier League era, and which Spurs player do you actually think you would be from the Premier League era? Taking into account your own skill set.
I don't really want to be any footballers. I'm not really
You've done it, haven't you?
I'm not really tenant in the playground anymore. I was struggling with it a bit. I opened it up to kind of which Premier League player. And I kind of decided I'd quite like to be Jack Grealish from the final whistle of the Champions League final to now, because he looks like he's having the best time.
Doesn't he just? He really does, doesn't he? And we're all living it with him. And for anyone who criticises that, you know, fuck you. I mean, you want players to be honest and look like they're having the time of their life. And, you know, and he is.
And yeah, I saw some film from him earlier on. He's made his way to Ibiza. I don't know quite. I think
I saw those pictures.
I mean, maybe so. Kind of the player I could be. I mean, maybe when I was his age, you know, you have a heavy night and you wake up somewhere unexpected, and then kind of the weekend takes its own path, and then you know. So maybe I could have done a post Champions League final Grealish with enough money in my bank account, and
you certainly could have been a DJ at a post Grealish event, for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, yeah, anyway, good, I like good on choice. You, Jack. You're having the best time, living your best life.
Yeah, I like that. But is there anyone you think you actually would have been, like that horrible moment of reality? And bearing in mind that any Premier League football is going to be infinitely better than like 999 million percent of the people that we know. So let's just put that aside. Right?
I mean, I'm a bit of a clogger, so I don't know.
I've put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm trying to think. I'm equally as bad in any position, and equally as bad with both feet. So I'm two footed, but bad.
Consistent.
With both feet.
You're a consistent performer.
I'm a clogger. Yeah, but I don't know. Ben Davis, maybe. Maybe that's probably. That's a bit harsh on him, isn't it? But yeah.
Oh, that's okay. Very good. Jack Grealish and Ben Davis. And by the way, I think Jack Grealish should count as a partial Spurs player, given the fact he was within an inch of signing for us that time when he met with Poch. So I like that, and I like the call on it. And Jack Grealish, once again, the Games About Glory salutes you. A fine man. Being a juvenile of 56 who actually still gets the new shirt made with his name on the back and his number, and heaves his fat ass around a pitch once a week, that's me. I've got to tell you, of all the Premier League era players, I mean, Teddy, so on and so forth, but it's got to be Berbatov. I'd love to have been Berber. I mean, I love those incessant little flicks and that kind of stroll around, and your timing and your skill. Love to have been. But the truth is, I think I probably was more of a Stuart Nethercutt. With the greatest of respects to Stuart.
I certainly had a period where I would have walked around a football pitch with my socks half down, my shirt untucked, my fag and my cigarette in my mouth. So
yeah, brilliant.
I've certainly had a bash at that, but never been able to carry it off quite as well as he did.
Well, as a kid, I full on tarted out on the whole Ricky Villa, Glenn Hoddle, tightest of tight shorts vibe. Like when the first replica shirts were coming out in 1980, 81, I was wearing my shorts as tight as I could at the age of 13, 14, and my shirt and my hair was long. And I fancied myself as a hybrid of those two plus Alfie Conn. And when I hit the crossbar from 30 yards for the school team, I thought it was better than a goal. I mean, it wasn't. That's why.
Listener, I hate to tell you, but I've seen the photographic evidence of the tight shorts. If you ever have the misfortune of being in a WhatsApp group with Steph, every now and again, he'll find a photo and dig it out and share it with everyone, and then
it's a sin, isn't it?
So
it's terrible.
it's better than the one with young Steph with Jimmy Hill.
That's right. This is why Milo's identifying with going the full Grealish, because he has to suffer these images and then thinks, Christ, I better go full Grealish to get them out of my my memory.
Yeah, I doubt Jack remembers many photos he's seen over the last month.
He is just living his best life, isn't he? He just is. And is this the longest party that any footballer's ever had? I mean, it seems like the football, like the England international, got in the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, we do love Jack Grealish on this pod, but I suppose we should move on, right? We should move on to the week that was. And why don't you kick us off on the subject of on the tip of everyone's tongue, I suppose.
Harold Kane.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, go on.
So we're recording on Sunday. Earlier today, The Athletic reported that Bayern Munich have made their second bid, this time €80 million plus add-ons for Harry Kane. The first bid of €70 million. Made a few weeks ago, was dismissed out of hand by Spurs. And then earlier this week, it was reported that there was a pretty bumper pay deal and contract on the table for Harry, but that he's happy to sit it out until the end of the window. And you know, the club hopes that he's going to be bowled over by playing under Ange, and then he puts pen to paper. So the question really is, what do we think of Bayern's latest bid, and what do we think of their kind of strategy of kind of incremental increases in derisory bids?
Well, much like we've just been discussing Jack Grealish's party that was rudely interrupted by summer football, this feels like the Harry Kane transfer saga that was rudely interrupted by the season 2022-23, doesn't it? It feels like
two seasons.
Rinse and repeat.
Two seasons.
We've had two seasons in between.
Yeah. Man City, very very similar actually, where Man City, very publicly courting him, but not actually prepared to match his valuation. And
Bayern took a swing as well. They got in there, didn't they? Maybe it was during the season they got in, chipping away. That was last summer,
but they've only been talking about him. But I would have thought that, if you're Harry Kane's representatives and you want this move, and you'd have to, I'd have to assume that they've at least been given some encouragement by his camp, otherwise you wouldn't be putting these bids in. You would think that if you're his representatives, you say, look, we went through this 2 years ago. Don't fuck around with pissy little bids, because they're not going to talk to you. And the club don't want to sell. So the only way you're going to be able to do it is if you force the issue. You've got to come in with an offer that's going to, really make us think. And kind of €80 million, which is what, 68 million quid, is a long way short of that. I mean,
It all seems like press flirting to me. I remain sceptical that any official bid has been made or contact between the clubs. I'm even more sceptical of the fact that Thomas Tuchel dropped into Kane Towers for tea. I mean, it's possible that maybe they spoke for 5 minutes on the phone while Harry's on holiday, or more likely, there's been some conversation with Harry's reps just to say, well, yeah, I'm interested. But I just think there's so much pushing of agendas. I don't think we can take any of it seriously. And it's all to force a figure, in my opinion.
I'm sure that a bit, this is an official bid. I'm sure this is a bid because where it's been reported are reliable. I think it's possible that Kane's camp might be trying to use Bayern to flush out a bid from Real Madrid or someone else. I think it's inconceivable that we'd sell to an English club this summer. So there's no point in trying to force an issue this summer. So it's only going to be a move overseas. I take it at face value. I think it's widely reported in Germany that he has, that terms have been, he's got as far as terms being agreed. But I think at the very least, they've been given encouragement from Kane's camp. Otherwise, they wouldn't be wasting their time. They'd be looking for another striker. Yeah. They'd be bidding for someone else.
I'd say there's been a lot more quote unquote officializing of bids and desires to go than maybe matches the commensurate amount of contact. I'm sure there's been some contacts and casual conversation, but I mean, for me, it's got to be the equivalent of just like running into someone in a bar and saying, do you think you'd take that much? And it's like, let's just ump it. This is what you need to do if you really want to make it serious, because let me tell you. And I mean, look, the whole world knows how Daniel works. I mean, Bayern know how Daniel works. Harry Kane's camp knows how Daniel works. This is not a dress rehearsal anymore. This is the real thing. So this just all seems like Bayern are trying to squeeze him on the cheap, and Levy's not going to let him go for anything less than what? I think we think it's £100 million is the figure.
Yeah, at least.
There is no stated figure, is there?
So, no. But I think, I mean, if I was I think the key thing here is that Daniel Levy's got to be seen to win in this negotiation. Yep. The relationship with the fans, you know, and we're going to go on to talk about a load of things this week that have, you know, made a pissed off fan base even more pissed off. And, you know, I've wavered a bit on how I thought this would happen over the season. I thought at kind of the turn of the year when Conte was still around, I thought there was a very, very real chance that we would be, I thought it was likely we'd sell Harry Kane this summer because we wouldn't want to lose him for nothing. And then as the season went on, and Conte left and, you know, it got messy. You know, everything got messy at the club. I kind of thought that it was very difficult for the board to sell him because of the relationship with the fans and the atmosphere. Yeah. The last few weeks, I thought you kind of Ange has really lifted the mood of everyone. And I kind of thought I kind of thought that maybe it's conceivable and they'll be able to sell it again. And, you know, if the money's reinvested and they do it the right way, then it looks more doable again. The ticket prices increase that we're going to talk about later on, I think makes that more difficult again. And, you know, kind of, but I do think if there was a serious offer came in, you know, if it was, you know, 100 plus 110, 120 million, something like that pounds, then I think that could be sold. And particularly if Ange said, well, you know, I want to move on. I want to build a team. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to, kind of him treading water for a year, then I think I think the fans could take that.
That's the key thing, isn't it? I mean, I think that one thing that Postecoglou's done with the fan base is he seems to have most people on side. Most people can see how he is. The reports that are being squeezed out from the club are all very positive. You'd expect nothing less from that, of course. But these do seem like genuine reports. They seem to carry some genuine weight. We know how, you know, Postecoglou is. And if he decides that he doesn't want to put up with this drama, if he makes the call, if he goes, let's move on, then I agree with you. I think people would accept it. And then we're down to the fact, and that's when we'll truly learn whether Harry Kane wants to go to Bayern Munich. Because my personal belief is he doesn't, that he wants to sit out the season and have the full choice to go where he wants to go. And that could even mean staying with us if things look good enough, I believe. But if Ange decides that he doesn't want the theatre, he's going to turn around to Harry, isn't he? And he's going to say, sign the contract, mate, or we're going to, you know, we can't have this.
I mean, I don't think it's just the theatre with Ange. I think, you know, if you look at, you know, quite a few of the clubs he's been at, you know, one of his first actions is actually to clear out a lot of the big name players, you know, and you know, star strikers amongst that. I mean, he did it at Celtic.
Yeah.
I think he did it at South Melbourne as well. It's, you know, it's something he's done. And I think part of that is, you know, similar to how we saw with Poch. It's about having a squad who buy into your methods. He prefers younger players. He wants people, you know, he wants that athleticism. And I'm not saying that Kane can't do any of that. But he may well think that, you know, if you're staying around for a year and then looking to move on as a free agent, then you're not fully committed to everything I want. And cheers, but see you later.
I mean, as we both talked about as well before we started recording, though, I think that we both agree on this. And obviously, you'll tell me if I'm speaking out of turn for my assumption. But I think we both discussed Luka Modric and the situation he was in when he didn't go to Chelsea, you know, for whatever reason, partially because, of course, Daniel Levy would never sell to Chelsea, so on and so forth. But that final season where we knew it was his final season, I mean, everyone knew it from the moment he kicked a ball for us in August of that season. He was brilliant. He arguably had his best season ever for us. And I think, you know, that's the Harry we're going to get if he stays. So really, as a football club, we might be in one of those rare places where the most we can lose out of this situation is 100 million.
That's quite right. A lot.
I mean, but in football terms, it's actually, as you've said, he does possibly tend to like a clean slate if he feels that, you know, the elder players are not on board. And it feels like for the first time he's building a team that is designed to take advantage of goals from several places, not just one or two. I mean, obviously he's talked up Kane and Son, but, you know, it would not be the worst time to make this terrible parting if it has to happen. Yeah, I don't think it's going to, but here we are, 10 minutes later.
I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, I agree with certainly in terms of kind of next season and Kane, that, you know, if he stays on, I don't see any problems with him. I don't think he'll do what he did that Man City summer and turn up late. I'd expect him, he's due back at the training on Wednesday. I think he'll be here Wednesday or before. I don't think we'll see a repeat of that summer. And you think after that Man City summer, when actually he threw everything at trying to force a move, didn't he? I mean,
he did.
Gary Neville interview, he was, you know, he was late back for training and you know, other than actually coming out and saying openly that he wanted to leave. The silence was deafening that summer. Mm-hmm. And then he came back and he put his head down and played really well. He hasn't been as vocal this summer. I did wonder earlier on. So the snake at Chelsea was talking about him earlier in the week. And
The who?
The snake at Chelsea. And
you're not buying into that, are you? And come on.
I'm having fun with it, Steph. So as I was saying to you earlier on, you can take things too seriously or you can have fun with it. I'm going to have fun with it. So the poisonous snake at Chelsea was talking about him earlier on this week and talking him up. And, you know, he can't really say anything else, but obviously the press make a story out of it. If I was Harry Kane and I wanted to try and force this, I would... And he's bound to be asked about what he thinks about Pochettino at Chelsea at some point. I would say I really enjoyed working for him and I'm really interested to see how he gets on this season. And the press will go mad and Spurs fans will do what we always do when this happens and have a meltdown. And I think at that point, the fan base would be quite happy to send him to Bayern Munich or Real Madrid or anyone else other than a close rival who could join for free next summer. So if I was Harry Kane, wouldn't even have to go out and say anything public, you know, particularly disloyal. I would just say nice things about Pochettino and let the press do the rest.
I mean, two things there. Number one, he doesn't have to, really, does he? I mean, he's got the whip hand right now. I don't think, I mean, time is on his side. I mean, the only thing that can screw any of this up for him is an injury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is. It's the only thing. Otherwise, he's in the perfect place in his career. I mean, he really is.
Yeah. I mean, he'll be 31 next summer, won't he? So, it's this summer or next. If he wants to make that big move, it's this summer or next. There isn't really another one after that. And I think maybe moving as a 30-year-old, if he does want to do a couple of years overseas and then come back, you know, maybe now's the time to do that. But who knows? Let's see how this plays out in the summer.
Indeed.
Should we move on?
By the way, I have to ask because I know you and I love you, but was that a little cheeky bit of fishing you were doing there?
A what?
A little bit further back. Was that a little cheeky bit of fishing there?
I'm trying to bait you.
Yeah. Was that a tiny little bit of baiting? Have I managed to come through that with
No, it's just like I said, just having fun with it. And I'm
okay, all right. Because I'm not having fun with that whole thing. Actually, that's part of the social media racket that has really driven me mad this week, and why I've sort of been. We were talking about this before off pod, and I scroll through my things, and I see people going. It's like oh, he's a snake, or oh, Eric Dyer's dictating the terms. Oh, this club, leave me this. And I'm just like, why won't you all shut the fuck up? Like, just shut up. We have a manager who's moving forwards. I tell you. And then I look at my phone, and I look at these fees, and I dip in here and I dip in there, Twitter, Twatter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, and then I'm just like, fuck it, put the phone down. And I know that I'm somewhat inadequate when it comes to dealing with these social media chains. We were talking about this, I know, and you actually said something which I found very useful, and which I asked you to share with the listeners. So this is a good point, this is a good moment.
I mean, first off, I'd recommend you blocking me because I've made at least 5 or 6 snarky tweets about him this week. Only just taking the piss. It's not serious. It's just having some fun with it, isn't it?
Yeah. But I do think you have a very, very good rule of thumb, which I know I'm pushing you to do this. And I think this is for everyone listening. If you want to get through the summer of transfer bullshit and all the other bullshit and tittle tattle and other, I think Milo's got a very good foolproof social media toolkit.
My idiot's guide to social media, given to you by an idiot, is first of all, so this is Twitter specifically. I don't really do any other social media than that. So only use the following tab. Don't touch for you. Anyone who uses Twitter regularly would know that. Block or mute all of the aggregator accounts. They just spin shit and wind people up. And then just generally a zero tolerance policy on twats. If someone's being a twat and they're annoying you, either mute them or unfollow them or block them. You don't have to, you know, you're curating your feed. You don't have to have that there. I think like kind of everyone on social media has got a duty to either be interesting or funny. And if you're not doing either of those things, just get out of my feed, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing of for you and aggregator accounts is really important because it is, we all lose sight of that. I mean, you know, those of us who are maybe more casual attendees of social media, or it's particularly Twitter, you know, we lose sight of that. And those words for you, you do immediately look at them. You think, oh, that must mean things that are interesting to me. Well, not especially. They're things that are going to get people like me, especially throwing 3 handbags around at the same time and shouting fuck whilst twirling in their shorts.
You have to think about how the algorithms work on social media. I mean, Facebook's famous for this in that it's kind of hate and things that make you angry that rise to the top. And the reason for that is because people go back. So if people are riled up, then you'll go back, you'll go back, you'll go back, and go back again. And I'm sure we've all had nights on you know, social media or, you know, message boards. What's that cartoon? So, you know, where someone's shouting down, you're going to be long, you're going to be long coming up to bed. Says, no, someone's wrong on the internet. You know, we've all been there.
We have. And, it's terrible.
And
it's
but terrible. The algorithms that promote it are promoting that kind of stuff up your feed because that's what keeps you going back.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't like curated feeds. You know, I want to be able to control what I see. And that's means that I'm you know, I'm picky about who I follow. I say that I follow, you know, thousands of people on Twitter. It's a long list, but yeah, I'm picky about who I follow.
But you're essentially suggesting something which I think is very important, that it is a tool. And that when it comes to things like the transfer window, which let's face it, in the last 15 years have really become every bit as traffic laden as the regular season. I mean, everyone's seen the opportunity to spin and create events and dramas and so on. I mean, how many weeks in a row now are we talking about Harry Kane? Of course we're talking about him. Everyone is talking about him. We're a Tottenham pod. We're going to, but at the same time, probably important that we curate our feeds.
Yeah. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of kind of what I would say used to be quite good Spurs sites that used to be, yeah, start off as blogs and stuff that have got kind of more and more unreliable. Hyped up in order to try and draw in clicks. You know, there's a lot of Spurs podcasts who do the same thing. They'll just tweet any old shit out in order to get engagement.
It's important to remember that.
Anyway, shall we move on?
Shall we move on? But I think it was an important thing to get into, and I'm glad that we did. And thanks for the tips. They're important. I think they're important. But what's equally important is to point out that Oliver Skip is a European champion. Skippy was part of the England under-21 squad that beat Spain 1-0. In the final of the Euro under-21 tournament on Saturday night. Skippy came on in the 73rd minute of the final and played in every England game throughout the tournament. By the way, it was a tournament where England did not concede a goal, which I think is a spectacular achievement. I didn't see too many of the games, to be honest. I've been keeping up with it through highlights. How about you? Did you watch any of the start to finish?
Yeah, I've watched most of the games. And watched the final yesterday. I've enjoyed the tournament. I'd say I much prefer youth tournaments generally, then I don't really like kind of World Cups quite so much. So yeah, I've enjoyed it. And I think, what's been remarkable for England now is that, we've had success at pretty much every, youth age group now, winning major tournaments over the last few years. So it really does bode well for the senior team.
Great. Good stuff. I leave that with you. As I say, I was catching highlights, and of course, highlights are great because you see the best bits. So I wasn't watching the whole games, but I did like what I saw.
Should we move on to something where there are no best bits? So the club have released the ticket prices for next season. And it's fair to say that the increases are eye-watering. The cheapest tickets for a Category A game have jumped from £52 to £65, which is an increase of 25%. The cheapest that an adult taking one child to a Category A game could get tickets now for is £97.50. So this comes on top of increases in the cost of membership, although season tickets were frozen. So first question down here is, what do you think, or what do we think? I mean, I can hear from your huffing and puffing, and, you know, for listeners, Steph's rubbing his forehead and kind of looking at the floor and just generally looking a bit nonplussed.
Well, number one, there's more forehead to rub than there used to be several years ago. That's a bit disturbing. But on a serious point, I mean, I found myself caught in two worlds here, because there is a horrible reality. There is a massive financial situation globally. Inflation is real. It's affecting everything. I would suggest that in this in the general capitalist models that we operate, greed is king, and is in many industries. I don't see profit margins being sacrificed in order to give everyone a better shake of the tree. That goes for any industry, whether it be airline, whether it be concert tickets, whatever. So on the one hand, I can't say I'm surprised. On the other hand, look, it's a massive issue. You know, the timing was a problem. The timing of the information being delivered, the way in which the information was delivered. It sometimes makes me wonder if there's an AI bot who delivers this information in the way they do, because it seems like an ice cube. It's delivered with no warmth whatsoever. I mean, you don't deliver an increase with warmth. I think the biggest problem is, how are we going to keep, you know, local fans and what I would sadly have to refer to now as the average proles like you and I, mate, how do we remain, you know, financially able to regularly support the team live? And what happens to the atmosphere?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think kind of the point about kind of general cost of living inflation is Yeah, it's valid here. You know, if you look at the cost of pretty much everything post lockdown, and certainly kind of other entertainment spheres, which is probably what the club are looking at. I know it feels different as football fans because you don't go to the theatre every Saturday, or at least most people don't. Concert tickets, going out for a meal is all hotels, all fiendishly expensive, increased massively. And there's lots of stuff there that I used to do a lot more that I can't afford to do as often. And personally speaking, going to the football is probably going to be amongst that. If you are taking a family, then I think it's going to be, for a lot of people, it's going to be a once or twice a season treat now rather than maybe more frequently than that. But in terms of kind of football for the people, that kind of angle, Steph, I mean, I think that boat sailed quite a long time ago. Football's been increasingly expensive. A lot of people have been priced out. In terms of local fans, most of the fans who go to the games aren't local. They're traveling quite some distances. And, I think we'd probably see a lot more people coming from probably outside London than London itself. I don't know how you do a survey on that, but, I think that's probably the case.
You're right there. Yeah, it's a reality, isn't it? I mean, it's horrible to admit, but it's been going that way for a couple of years.
I think the way it will impact on people, particularly, if you look at those Category A games, if you want to go to those, we're talking about some of the cheaper tickets there. The more expensive ones are quite often the ones that are available to members, because the cheaper ones sell out very quickly. And the other thing we have to bear in mind is that the we don't have any figures on the number of concession tickets available, but I think, you mentioned a while ago when the season ticket freeze happened that there were stories around kind of less concession tickets being available. And I quite often take my stepdad there, who's a pensioner, but I always have to pay full price for his ticket. I buy his tickets to take him. I always have to buy his tickets at full price because I can't get concession tickets.
Which is a great shame. Number one, he's a lovely bloke, actually, really cheerful friendly. And also, I think it's a shame that there aren't more concessions, because both the older and the younger generation, they form the strand through which football travels and always has travelled. And we broached an idea on this pod about a year ago. I don't think we came to a full consensus on it, but we were talking about the idea of some sort of package where for like £80 or could grade the packages for like £65 or £80 or whatever, you could bring two kids and get a hot dog and get a drink and see a game. And if you did that for like 500 or 1,000 tickets per game, like made that package available until say 3 days before, and if you haven't sold them, then sell them for regular price, that would be a concession. That would be giving something back to what I think is a really important thread in football. But as you've said, am I just guilty of being a utopian sod? I mean, as I told you before, I'm watching the 1978 remake of bloody the James Herriot show and loving it. I mean, am I stuck in that? Is this a utopia it long gone?
There's no need to do that if you're selling out, though, is there? Man City and West Ham do kid for a quid because they can't sell out their grounds. We don't need to do that. Maybe what we could hope for maybe is, I mean, I suppose it depends on who we get in the League Cup. If you get lower league sides in that, then they might be Cat C games. But that's probably where you're most likely to see something like that. And maybe that's the opportunity. Obviously the Shakhtar game is very nicely priced, and I think there does need to be those opportunities, doesn't there, to bring people in, because if you can't get to games, then you don't get that bug, do you?
And by the way, I think, again, just to maybe redefine something you said, and you'll correct me if I heard you wrong, but when you said we don't need to because we sell out, I'm assuming that you're saying that from the perspective of the business people making these decisions. I think in your heart, you and I are in the same place, where if you can have like 500 concessions for the big games as well, and you've got a bunch of kids in there able to experience the excitement of a Man United or a Liverpool or a Chelsea coming to White Hart Lane and see that, it's super important. But that's the tripping point, isn't it? How do we get that to happen?
From a business perspective, there's no need to do that if you're selling out those games. Why would you do it? That kind of thing only comes in where you don't have that. I think just one other thing that we ought to also kind of touch on here is you've also got to be aware that the demographic going to games has got older and older and older and older. And that's largely down to disposable income. If you look around the ground, it's I don't know what the average age is on a match day, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was 50 or maybe even 60, because it's it's not something that people can afford to do when often.
It's interesting because I didn't know that was a potential demographic, and I know that you keep an eye on these things. I find that fascinating. It explains several questions that come up to your season. Why don't we sing more? Why is the atmosphere so up and down? So on and so forth. It also somewhat feeds into the next story that I think you're going to talk about, which is the Fan Advisory Board, because I think they have a huge role to play in this.
On Thursday, the club announced the results of the Fan Advisory Board elections. Johnny Tyndall, who's the men's season ticket holder, Sian Wallace, women's season ticket holders, Hermali Patel from the members, Paul Pavlou from Domestic Supporters Clubs, who's chair of Yorkshire Spurs, and Chuck Hoffman, International Spurs Clubs, who's chair of Austin Spurs in the States, are our reps. And they'll be joining Chris Parrus from Proud Lady Whites, Dee Bright from Spurs Ability, Sachin Patel from Spurs Reach, Stephen Cavalier from the Supporters Trust, and Rachel Martin from the Supporters Trust. The first FAB meeting will take place on Monday, the 10th of July. Oh, that's going to be a bit spicy, isn't it? I mean, they've really kind of dropped a bombshell on them.
This is why. It's why I was saying, is it AI that decided when to make this announcement?
Well, one of the people who might have made the decision on the announcement was Donna Maria Cullen, who's chairing it alongside Levi Harris, who are club reps. Maybe they just pissed Daniel off and he thought, I know, I'll drop this on them before the first meeting. That'll teach them for taking my seat in the canteen or whatever it was.
indeed.
Timing. This was positive news. And then you do that. We do like to shoot ourselves in the foot. So given our previous item, this looks to be a bit fiery. FAB members will be voting to select a supporters representative, co-chair, and the co-chair will attend four club board meetings a year. And the minutes from the FAB meetings will be published alongside details of how supporters can contact the representatives.
Well, I mean, look, so many times I was going to jump in there and like start spouting off my thoughts, as you doubtless would have been expecting. But I've got to say this. I think if ever there's a moment for the Fan Advisory Board to act as a bridge and an educator to these people, whether it be performative or otherwise, they have to, rather than just, we can't just criticize these decisions. It's obvious that we dislike them. There is context behind them, which I think that we may be offered a little bit of at the top end of this entire section that we're doing. You know, that the whole world is in a financial, we're in a financial crisis, right? So we're there. But I think that they do, as a Fan Advisory Board, they do have to teach Donna Maria Cullen and whoever, you know, the art of public relations, the art of caring. I don't know if you can teach people empathy. They have to learn that this is not how you win people over. Like, this is not, you know, it's not appropriate behavior if you want people to feel good about your football club.
Well,
how do you teach that? The Fan Advisory Board hopefully will help educate them.
So if any of our FAB representatives are listening to this on their way to the meeting on Monday, tomorrow, when this pod will be out, brief message to the club, please just stop treating us like cunts. I think it was probably the message there. And you know, if we can get that over, I don't even think it's always what they do. It's just like how they get it across. You know, if you explain decisions and why they have, why they've been made, you might not like it, but you could understand it. But kind of dumping this in silence, which is the signature way of Tottenham Hotspur. You know, just running away from anything that is unpopular just doesn't help.
You're absolutely right. I mean, let's take this from the perspective of, I don't personally understand what the difference is between making that price announcement when they did versus making that price announcement a week later, after they've had a FAB meeting, after they've had a chance to sit down, maybe explain the decision in a way that feels inclusive and explanatory, as you quite rightly said, rather than dictatorial and this is what's happening. What is the difference in that? Is it that they just don't care? The club don't care, or they don't get it? Which is it? I can't tell the difference. I hate to say it, I don't think they care.
I mean, I think, going back to that announcement rather than talking about FAB, I think that announcement should have been made before the membership renewals, so people can make an informed decision as to whether they'll be able to afford to go and whether a membership is worthwhile. You know, we're both members. Our membership has been renewed. We've done that now. And now we're looking, you know, it's different for you because you're traveling a long way. And, you know, in the scheme of things, an extra 15 quid on the ticket is probably not the decider on whether you're going to go to a game or not. It's whether you're in the UK and whether you've flown over or not.
Right.
But, you know, for a lot of members, it's going to have that impact. Let us make informed decisions.
But you have hit a very important point, and that is, and this goes back to what we've been saying, there is a cost of living crisis coming up, and that 15 quid difference we're talking about is a huge, huge deal when you're talking about taking a couple of kids who are also going to want some food, who might want to dip into the shop, all of that stuff. It's a massive difference, and it just shows such a detachment of reality
and your train ticket is X amount more, you know, particularly if you're traveling distance, all of that stuff is more. So
So if I'm the FAB board, and further to your suggestion, which I like, which is a good leading question, my second question would be to the club, you know, do you actually care about those fans who sit in the middle, the fans between a season ticket holder and the fans between, you know, people who travel from abroad a few times a year, the floating average supporter? Do you actually care about them? Or should we just expect from now on that all decisions made when it comes to ticket prices are not going to take them into account? Because it sure seems that way. It really does. By the way, I don't understand the logic of adding an extra 10, 15 quid to a seat that prices out an extra 10,000 people, when maybe if those people came with a cheaper ticket, they'd end up spending 25, 30 quid in the shop or on the concessions, and you'd make the money on the other side anyway. It doesn't. Someone explain that financial optic to me.
Well, that's we should move on from that, because that was the first item, the item before. Okay. We're meant to be talking about FAB now. But I would assume that they've looked at that, and that they've looked at what the, you know, what they're likely to take. Should we move on to the next item? Because
we should, but we should just say that we do, in closing, why don't we just say we really do hope as a pod that this FAB this new constitution of FAB, so to speak, is powerful and actually does manage to, you know, have a voice for those that haven't had one before. Let's hope.
By nature, I'm an optimist. This is something that I've been calling for a long time.
Yep.
I really hope it works. I really hope that the club listens to these people, because I think the biggest problem with the club is that they isolate themselves from the fans and they don't listen. And then until things get really bad, and then they get a bit reactive.
That's right. I agree with that. And so a message to Donna Cullen and Levi Harris and Daniel by proxy, don't be performative with this gesture. Be you know, interactive, proactive, and don't just throw a bone or two. Listen, because we all love our football club. We're not saying this against you or against anything else. We're saying it for Tottenham Hotspur and for the supporters of. So please, let this be a progressive move forward, and let's hope that, you know, it brings some good stuff. Shall I talk about Scott Munn?
Talk about Scott Munn. It's only a short item, this one.
It is a short item. Mercifully for the listener, it is a short item for me. Anyway, Scott Munn's start at the club has apparently been delayed due to hold-ups at the City Group end. He was due to start on the 1st of July alongside Big Ange, but, I mean, look, we have to agree, mate. He's already been up to some stuff, hasn't he?
He has, but it just means that he's not not sat behind his desk at Hotspur Way. I don't know. I mean, Paratici worked from a hotel in Turin, didn't he, for several
wherever
weeks
there's
before.
A social gathering, it seems.
Yeah, like, so, you know, I'm sure he can start from over there. We don't know the details at the moment. Hopefully it's not too long before he joins.
We know he worked from a coffee bar next to Daniel Levy at London Airport recently. Yeah. We saw that photo. So anyway.
So Gazzetta dello Sport are reporting that Roma are cancelling their East Asian tour, and that our friendly against them in Singapore on 26th of July is now in doubt. I think this is kind of money problems with Roma, meaning that they're not going to fly. So I don't know whether we'll try and find local opposition at, you know, a couple of weeks' notice, or I don't know, or becomes an open training session or something. I don't know, but it's not the club's fault. It's just really disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah, can I crack a joke about Jose Mourinho letting us down one more time? No, probably not. The club have confirmed the 11 scholars who have joined our under-18s as full-time first-year scholars. And, it's fun to read these names, because maybe in 2 or 3 years' time, we will be talking about them in the first team. Who knows? I'm a dreamer, right? I like to dream. So, with apologies to anyone's name who I butcher, because I am reading these for the first time, and so I'm doing it, this is completely live take, Samuel Archer, Charlie Warren, Timilayan Adekunle, Theodore Adelusi, Roman Egan Riley, Callum Logan, Dante Orr, Herbie James, Callum Ulusesi, Mikey Moore, who we have talked about in this pod already, and Ellis Lehane.
We haven't talked about him yet. He's going to come next.
Yeah, he is. Oh, we'll just carry on. Shall I just carry on with the
go on,
this,
you do Mikey Moore.
I'll do these two. I might as well. Mikey Moore has signed a new deal with the club that will keep him at the club until 2026. And I know, Milo, you're particularly excited by this. You were excited the last time we talked about him. And I think everyone's
excited. He's excellent. He's excellent. Yeah, really good.
Yeah. He's been approached by a number of top clubs. And also, he's been approached by Chelsea. Boom, boom.
I wrote that.
I know, I like it. I think it's good. It's very good. Did I deliver it the way you should? I should have. How would you have read that to get the full maximum benefit?
This is excellent news, as the 15-year-old has been approached by a number of top clubs and Chelsea.
There we go. Excellent. Delivered by the author, and very well done. Go on, Oliver Iroh.
Yes. Am I doing this? Oliver Iroh signed his first professional contract with the club. Oliver was part of the under-17s and under-18 sides that won the Premier League Cup last season. And had scored two goals in the under-17 final against Nottingham Forest. He scored 9 goals in 20 games for the under-18s last season, and he was on a really, really hot run at the end of the season, where he scored 6 goals in 5 games. So, and that's from the wing. So, yeah, he's good.
It's good stuff overall talking about this. And again, just to share with the listeners, we were talking before we started recording, and I realise I don't watch enough of our youth sides, and there's really no excuse right now. And this is not a plug for Spurs Play. I'm not an official patsy. But what I will say is that Spurs Play does give me the chance to keep up with the youth teams a lot more, and I endeavour to do so. And I'm going to be looking out for some of these names wherever I can find them in games, and we will be, and we'll be talking about them more and more. And hey, let's hope they ascend to the first team squad in the not too distant future. I mean, not all of them, but some of them.
talking of Spurs Play, the club have had a load of kind of training videos out this week and a Q&A with Ange. You watched any of those, Steph?
Yeah, I did.
Any thoughts or observations?
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, this was a moment which I thought was very, very well done by the club in
the
terms
Q&A.
Of media. Yeah, I thought it was good to get some fans in. Really good and really good proactive stuff. And, you know, the bonding, if you will, I think we all felt, you all feel a little closer by proxy when you see your own speaking to the manager. And, you know, he's just got such a calm, confident way about him. He came across so well. You know, he comes across as a real egalitarian as well. Like, I mean, everyone gets the same from him, which I love. So I thought that was a real PR win. Nice to see the training videos, clips as they are. Of course, the club are not going to be putting out any of the edgy stuff, but the stuff we're seeing, everyone looks like they're having a good time. It's added to my positivity about the coming season, despite the internet's flood of negativity.
So this is a bit back onto a previous item you say about him kind of being an egalitarian. Someone on Twitter posted some clips from his book earlier on today. So see what you make of this. So this is from his book. This is Angie's own words. Fans won't respect an owner purely because he or she has money. Just take a look at the wealth behind the American owners of England's Liverpool FC. They saunter into town echoing emptiness about doing something for the fans of Liverpool, and then they jack up ticket prices. It's not lost on the fans, many of whom will come from working class families, that the owners are billionaires already. So when they ramped up the ticket prices, 10,000 Liverpool fans walked out in protest in the 77th minute of the home game in February 2016. It was the first time in the 124-year history of the club that the fans had staged a walkout. If you're the owner, you realise you can't just do what you want, even if you do own the club. All your money is worthless if you've ignored the community. As Professional Footballers Australia proclaimed in its Australian Premier League competition proposal, launched as a replacement for the NSL, no fans, no value. Not every rich owner of a football club makes that connection. One buys a sporting club to be part of something. The good owners understand that.
I mean, dare I say it, it sounds almost Shankly-esque, doesn't it? Given he's talking about Liverpool there. No, brilliant. I mean, you know.
He is a Liverpool fan, so, and that's...
Yeah, that's what you want. That's the vibe you want at the club, isn't it? I mean, I always felt that was the vibe that Poch had when he was managing us, that, you know, he thought as much about the bum in the seat. The bottom in the seat, not, you know, the fan in the seat, as he did anyone else. And I feel that Ange is the same. I think this is great.
Yeah, I mean, there's more steak and barbecue with Poch, isn't there? But I don't know, there might be barbecue with Ange as well. But I mean, back to the kind of the stuff on Spurs player, I think I agree with you about the Q&A. I thought it was brilliant. Mm. I think the training sessions have been really interesting. One of the things I noticed that the one-touch passing routines they've been doing, the goalkeeper's been involved in that, which is, mm-hmm. you kind of expect, but quite often in the past, we've seen the keepers out on their own, doing their own thing rather than being involved in kind of ball work. I think one of the things I noticed also, to compare it to kind of last summer, early in pre-season last summer, it was a lot of gym work and a lot of fitness work rather than ball work. And I think whilst there has been some clips from the gym, it seems that they're spending a lot more time out on the pitch with the ball at their feet. Mm-hmm. And, and also you can see that the atmosphere appears to be really, really good.
Yeah, which is what you want. Yeah, I mean, it all looks so good, like it's going so well on the pitch and with the coaching staff, isn't it?
And we've only got, 9 days now to the first game of pre-season, so not long to wait to our first look at Ange Ball.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's moving fast. And what continues to move fast as well are these transfer rumours that, there's always a weird one that comes every week. And hot off the heels of my speculation that would Hugo stick around for another year, which was quite rightly laughed at on this pod because I think I was just sort of thinking out loud, as I tend to do sometimes, and maybe I should do less of. But Foot Mercato are reporting that Inter Milan are in talks with us to sign Hugo Lloris to replace Manchester United bound Andre Onana. Do you see this coming?
I didn't. It's quite funny, actually, because Inter Milan were meant to want Vicario to replace Onana, and now we've got him, and Onana's going to Man United. Now it looks like Lloris going back the other way. I think quite a few other journos have picked this story up. It appears to have legs. I mean, it's a great move for Hugo. I thought he was going to be going to France maybe a lesser league than that, and to go to one of the big five leagues and a really, really, really big club at that is a wonderful opportunity for him.
I hope we do the right thing and make it easy for that to happen if he wants it to happen.
Well, the rumour is, and we've got the story further down, I might as well take that one now with Perisic. So Gianluca Damasio said that Spurs are planning to cancel Perisic's contract so he can join Hajduk Split. My understanding is that both Lloris and Perisic, we're going to pay them off so that
good
they leave. So, I mean, it's going to be a lot of money. I would say, actually, I mean, with Lloris, if Inter Milan want him, why aren't, even a nominal transfer fee, or they pick up his wages? It seems a bit funny that we'd have to pay him off for him to join a club that's pretty big. But either way, I think the most important thing is that we start trimming down the squad. And, as we were saying as well, both of those are high earners and both of them are foreign players. And all of those are things that we need to trim down in order to start moving forward.
I mean, have no fear. I don't think we'll end up paying that. Even if we write off their contract or tear up their contracts, I'm sure an arrangement will be made for their future club to pay off their wages, or they'll get a bonus that will match the wages they would have got. I'm sure something will be worked out. I can't see us taking the hit on their wages as well. But you're right. Whatever needs to happen should happen. And good luck to Hugo. I mean, it would be a real shame, wouldn't it, though, if he does go without having a proper send off. That's kind of one of the things.
I mean, that's already happened. That's already happened. He's never playing for Spurs again.
Yeah, it is so, a shame, isn't it? It's a shame. We'll give him a proper send-off at some point.
I suspect that he'll be left at home on Friday when the club flies off to Australia. I can't see the point in him flying to Australia. That's going to be the really telling moment when we look at all of these players who we're speculating as to whether they're going to be part of the squad or not. There's going to be a load of players left behind, we'll know that they're definitely not in Ange's plans at that point. There'll also be some players who make the trip who will later on be sold. It's an interesting one.
It is. Long lay. Apparently, Spanish newspaper La Vanguardia Barça. Oh, no, that's the president. I'm reading this all wrong. Why don't you start that again?
That is the Spanish newspaper.
Oh, I just read it completely wrong. So here you are. You're hearing it.
So in an interview with Spanish newspaper La Vanguardia, Barça president,
there it is.
Joan,
Mr. Comma,
reporter, They said that he expects to reach agreement with us for the transfer of Clement Longley this summer. There's no point putting the comma in now, Steph.
Well, there is for me. It just makes me feel better about the fact I fucked it up, you see.
All right, okay.
It's all to do with making me feel better about having absolutely butchered that, you see. But anyway, the point being, are we going to get Clement Longley in here? And I think we're both in agreement on this. I think that we're going to sign, you know, two new defenders, and it's going to be, you know, Tapsoba or Van de Ven and maybe Tosin. And if not him, then maybe that's where Longley comes back in. Am I right? Do we agree on that?
I think we'll sign one of Van de Ven and Tapsoba for the left-hand side, and I think Longley will probably be understudy to them. So I think Longley's going to happen, and because I think we're going to want... Yeah, we haven't got anyone at the club who can play on the left-hand side in an Ange team. So, yeah, we need two left centre-backs. Yeah. And then I think probably the other deals depend on whether any of our current centre-backs other than Romero stay around. I don't think we're going to need five centre-backs for the season. We've got a couple of good players in the youth set up. So I think it's two and two, and it probably depends on outgoings at that point. So, yeah, I think Longley will probably happen. I think we'll probably get him for next to nothing, I think.
Interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a similar deal to we're talking about with Lloris and Perisic, yeah. But out from Barca.
It's interesting. I mean, personally, I'd like to see new defenders completely coming in, but I don't argue that, you know, fiscally, the idea of Longley coming back does seem to make some sense. But anyway, moving on to what we discussed last week. Manor Solomon. I've got to be honest, Milo, I just don't really know where to begin and end with this, because there's been quite a bit happening. Shakhtar CEO Sergei Palkin is unhappy with the FIFA ruling that means that foreign players registered with Ukrainian clubs can effectively void their contracts and join other clubs. The effect of this with Solomon is that he can join us on a free now, as his contract only has 6 months to run. I mean, in fairness, Palkin said, Tottenham is an established, respected club with a big history and a huge number of fans around the globe. We are sure that Tottenham executives understand that Shakhtar invested significant money in the Solomon transfer, investment that Ukrainian clubs in our difficult position simply can't afford to lose. We hope we will have a meeting with Tottenham representatives on the eve of our friendly match, and in good faith, we will find a solution to the Manuel Solomon issue. The solution should satisfy both sides. You got Fabrizio Romano saying that the Solomon's medical has been pushed back a week, but that the transfer is in no doubt. Mate, what do you make of it?
I kind of feel sympathy for all sides here. I feel sympathy for Shakhtar and other Ukrainian sides who are kind of losing players for nothing. Particularly if you think back a year ago when he joined Fulham. Fulham were in negotiations with Shakhtar to sign him permanently. And then the FIFA ruling came out and Fulham ripped that up and took him on loan because it was free. So they lost out then. I think from a player's point of view, I think, you know, if this FIFA ruling wasn't there and foreign players registered by Ukrainian clubs were being forced to stick to their contract but couldn't play any football, that's not really fair on the players. So I think there had to be something done. I think what's been done is imperfect. I don't know what Solomon is worth with 6 months left on his contract. If you take away this, that, you know, he can effectively void it. I don't know what he would be worth at this stage of his contract. Not a huge amount, I wouldn't have thought. And I think you've also got to be honest and say that if he was full price, I think transfer market value him at about 18 million euros. If he was in contract, I don't think we'd be buying him for 18 million euros. I think the interest in the club is because he's cheap. He plays in a position where we're short, and it's speculative. I think, you know, he's a good player. He's a talented player. But it's a player that if it doesn't work out, you know, you can fill a position in the squad. If it works out, great. We've got a really good player there. If it doesn't work out, we've got no problem selling him in a year's time and turning a profit on him. And that's where our interest is. Maybe the solution with Shakhtar is that we give them a percentage of any resale. I mean, maybe that's the way that we do it. That might suit all sides because I think his value is pretty low at the moment. And I'd assume that the friendly was a sweetener to try and help this deal through. But I hope we can find a compromise that suits all sides. But
you know,
it's difficult.
I mean, I mean, I have to say, I agree with you. There is sympathy on all sides. I do feel sorry for the player, albeit I feel the player will get his way and he'll get the move. And I do feel, actually, a little sympathy for Paukin as well. I mean, there is, you know, these clubs are, they're literally fighting for their lives. I mean, both on and off the pitch, they are fighting hard for any respite. You know, this comes down once again, you know, what does our club have in the sense of what you have to do versus what might be the right thing to do? You know, do they have to give any money over?
No.
No. Would it be a gesture of some humanitarian, well, not even humanitarian, decency? Would it not be a decent thing to agree some level of compensation, a small amount, even if it is nominal and a gesture that puts a few quid back into, you know, Shakhtar's pocket and does the right thing, you know, spiritually? I know, naive, lemons, auras, whatever, but I think it would be the right thing. I just hope our club has it in them to recognise what the right thing to do is. As we've discussed earlier in this pod, I do think there's a bit of a shortfall in that sort of gauge when it comes to this football club.
Yeah, but I mean, I think all football clubs, it's not just us. You know,
that's a fair point. I don't disagree.
I mean, it's a different situation. But take Alfie Devine, for instance. We signed him from Wigan when Wigan were facing bankruptcy, and we got him dirt cheap. Yeah. And effectively, we signed him knowing that that club would be going out of business.
Yeah.
And you know, got a very good player cheap for that. And there's, you know, if there was a, you know, a very good young player who was available out of, I mean, in fact, it's happened to us, hasn't it? We've lost young players to other clubs because they've been poached off us at the end of their contract. It happens all the time. It happens to lower league clubs where they lose players all of the time for nothing.
And yeah, those clubs are struggling. Make a fair point.
You know, and obviously the situation in Ukraine is very different, and you know, Shakhtar Donetsk, you know, particularly, you know, given where they are in that country, you know, have had, you know, hardships that you...
Awful.
Awful. You wouldn't wish on anyone, you know, going back a long way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, generally, you know, if we passed up on this deal, there'll be a queue of other clubs who'll take him on the same deal, and Shakhtar won't get a bean out of it. Yeah. And so, okay. I don't know.
Fair point.
I do feel for everyone here. You know, do we, you know, what's real? You know, do we give them £1 million? Do we give them £2 million? What's the value of this? Or, you know, or maybe you say, you know, we'll give you, you know, 5% of a fee in when we sell him. You know, maybe that's fairer. I don't
something
know.
I think something needs to be done. There does need to be a gesture, and I'm sure one will be made. And I'm sure that, you know, it feels that all parties want this to happen, and it feels that it, you know, I'm sure it will happen. But my word, it has been, it's going to rumble on maybe a little longer. I wonder if he'll be on the plane. That's the question.
I think he probably will. I think the word is it's lined up for this week, so good. it's gonna happen. And yeah, hopefully, you know, maybe we just give them all of the gate from the friendly, and that's it. I don't know.
Yep. Okay. Right. Here we are.
Shall I take this bit, actually, Steb?
Go on. Yeah. Why don't you take this?
we've kind of waffled on a bit more than, you know, my beginner's guide to social media wasn't planned in the notes originally, and a few other bits and pieces. And obviously, we've gone back to our price rises a few times. So we were going to have a chat now about kind of what constitutes success for Ange. And kind of my thinking on this was when I suggested this to Steph earlier in the week was, you know, you've got a league there where we've got a load of, you know, very, very wealthy clubs. You know, Man City appear to have a monopoly on winning the league. And the domestic cups aren't shared around, you know, particularly more equitably. So in that kind of environment, what does success look like for him? You know, what is reasonable? What would be reasonable expectations for us? And I think this is just two of us, Steph. We can probably rattle through this quite quickly.
Careful.
But I don't know.
don't jinx it. What are you talking about? you know, we like to have a good, we like to get a little existential. I'll try and cut the existential bit out of my thinking here. I'll do my best. I mean, to give you the short answer, I'll give you the practical answer. Success with Ange would most certainly be a trophy and European football again. But my personal expectation, what I should say is, my personal definition of success under Ange Postecoglou for next season is to feel the fun of my football club again, to enjoy my football club again, to enjoy watching the football that my football club is playing again, and to feel that, you know, I've got a weekly escape from, you know, all the crap we were talking about earlier in terms of, like, you know, the world and so on and so forth. You know, I watch Spurs to be entertained. As you've said, you know, getting into trying to, you know, track financially doped clubs and replicate their success at this point, it really is kind of a fool's game. I mean, it is. There's no way you can outspend a Manchester City. I mean, Arsenal are doing their very best. I think they're going to come a cropper in the long, you know, in the not so short term, not so long term. I just want to enjoy it. I want to enjoy it. I want to tune in and see football that I love, and I want Ange to make me feel happy, even in defeat. Like, wow, we gave that a crack. This was excellent. That will be success. That's not tangible, is it? But no, success to me is not always tangible. It's about giving you what you want. That's what I want.
I think that's where I am. I think I want to enjoy it. I want it to be fun, and I think I want those moments. I think probably being a fan is about those those moments, those feelings. Yeah. And that's not necessarily winning a trophy, although obviously that is a moment. So I think I think the good, attractive football and memories, I think, is what I want from it. And my view on kind of the trophy thing, I think the league is sewn up. Very, very difficult to repeat what we did in the Champions League under Poch, that, you know, we get into the final. I think that's, it's going to be very, very tough to ever repeat that. And I think domestic cups are a lottery largely because, you know, and I think, I mean, this season we've got a chance to prioritise them more than we have in previous seasons because we haven't got European football. But I don't think that prioritising them necessarily makes it more likely, or significantly more likely, that we're going to win them, because you're still going to come up against one of the big clubs at some point. And then it's, you know, you've got a game where you, you know, you might win four times out of 10 or something like that. And so I don't know. I think, I just want to have fun. I just want to enjoy it. And that's success for me.
But you've hit the point of moments versus cups. I'll give you a fine example right here. Remember that Glenn Hoddle goal against Watford from the early 80s?
Well, I'm a bit too young to remember it firsthand, but I've certainly seen it. So it's not,
you've seen it, right?
It's not
it
a
on
moment
YouTube
for me, though. But yeah,
no. But he gets the ball. He gets a throw in from Gary Brooke. He does that fucking fantastic double Cruyff turn almost, and literally, I mean, he lofts that ball over Sherwood. I mean, I was behind the goal that day. That ball nestled in the corner and didn't move. It dropped in. It was beautiful. You asked me to remember the goal that beat Leicester City in the 1999 Worthlessington Cup final, and I have trouble remembering it. I mean, I can kind of call it up if I look, and I have trouble remembering anything in that run to that trophy that was as memorable as that goal. And those are the moments. Those are moments. I mean, you know.
I do wonder. So for me, like, kind of my time, my favourite times is, you know, in recent history as a Spurs fan, you know, we've covered this loads of times before, but, you know, Martin Jol, Redknapp, and then kind of early Poch. And my favourite bits of Poch is, you know, is probably, you know, finishing, you know, a year and a half before he left the club, really. Obviously, the Champions League run was great, but it wasn't a great season. Yeah. And I think probably with all of those, actually, expectation was quite low going into them and built up. And what we've had with the last few managers is higher expectation and then underperforming. And maybe what we need is not to have high expectation. I think that's probably the case with a lot of fans at the moment. They probably don't have high expectations. They like what they see of Ange, but they don't know what to expect beyond that. And maybe if we enjoy the ride, which is, I think, what happened with those managers, and we don't get preoccupied with stuff, we just go along with the ride and enjoy it and have fun.
Yes.
Then that's...
Yes, no, and unfortunately, the trophy wankers were allowed somewhat. Well, they weren't allowed to dictate anything because this club will do what it wants as it wants. But you know, there was a great, quote unquote, appreciation of the winners, and those winners actually managed to kill 2/3 of the style with which this football club has been known to play and perform for decades and decades prior. And success as a Tottenham supporter is pride in how you play.
I just remember
and enjoying it.
That first season we qualified for Europe under Jol, that run in of that season.
Yeah.
Singing every week, we're all going on a European tour. Each week and kind of that run in there. And that was after, you know, countless years, by which time our season was over by March, and there was nothing to do. Yeah, nothing to really play for. And then, you know, again, I think, you know, that first time in Champions League, you know, going to a Champions League game and hearing that music and thinking, I'm never going to hear that. That meant more to me than a League Cup final.
Oh, I mean, and again, sorry, I'm interrupting you.
I was going to say, I think all of that was, like I said, going along for the ride, enjoying the ride. And that's what I want.
it's so funny. I mean, one of the things that's happened recently, I think it's by proxy. I watched a Peter Crouch film that's on Amazon recently, which, by the way, is a really good watch in general. Obviously, it's a PR piece, but he's a, you know, he comes across as you think he does. He seems like a great guy. Increasingly, I'm seeing Harry Redknapp pop up in these sort of like, you know, clips. He popped up in the charity game clip for us towards the end of last season. And I'm beginning to remember his period of time with us as it felt at the time. At the time, I was all in, and I just got very upset with how he handled himself towards the end of it. But truth be told, there were some tremendous moments there. And I mean, you talk about moments. I mean, that goal, that Crouch goal, as you said, that sort into the next season's Champions League. I saw Ricky Villa score a cup final winner. That Crouch goal is right up there with some of my best memories. And that's with Yunus Kabul in the side and, like, you know, I mean, players that we wouldn't normally think twice about now. But, you know, David Bentley was there. But yeah, I think this club has always been about fantastic moments. And as you've said in the notes, I mean, pretty football, maybe attractive football. I mean, that's our success. That's what we're good at. That's what we're known for around the world. And, you know, look, if we can win some trophies here and there, great. If Ange can bring trophies, well, great. But I think we're both agreed. We want some moments like that. And I love a manager who says he'd rather lose, or let's say he'd rather win 5-4 than win 1-0. Let's say that. And that seems to be Ange all over.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, there's a quote from him I saw just before he joined me. He says, I don't open the champagne over a clean sheet, which is...
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I love it.
I mean, and I think, and maybe that's the other thing, actually, is having a manager who's not problematic. So, you know, we did have good results under Conte. We did have good performances under Conte. And, you know, the same is true of Mourinho in patches. But it was always, for me at least, slightly tainted by who was there.
For both of
us. And I think, yeah, being able to enjoy the football without any of that kind of conflicted feelings and just say, actually, you know, I love the players. I love the manager. I love where we're going. I love the football. This is fun. This is a release for 90 minutes. Would be great.
Yeah, no, I stand by what I've said about last season, which is my best moment. My best memory of last season was that 40 minutes at Anfield when we were 3-0 down and we pulled it back to 3-3. I mean, I want to see more of that without the beginning bit. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. You know, it is. Well, and that would be success. Let's get more of that.
It's possible in the first half of this season there might be a lot of that whilst we're all trying to bed in and learn a new system and new players are getting used to it and all the rest of it. But I'm pretty confident that, you know, come Christmas it will have clicked, we're settled in. We'll be seeing some really good football, and I'm sure before that we'll see good football as well. And
that will be success.
But it might be in fits and starts. And for this season, European football the following year would be success, I think.
Yeah, and I think the fact that we've got a manager who understands what this football club is and what this football club needs to do on the pitch is already partial success compared to the some of the previous managers we've had in recent times.
Well, that was quite a quick conversation in the end, Steph, because we tend to agree with each other all the way through. This is where we need Gareth to kind of balance us out. And
that's good, very good. No, it was a good one this week. Thank you. Thank each other. Why don't we thank each other?
So a big pat on
thank
the back.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll pat each other on the back from a distance. There we go. That's us patting ourselves
across,
on the back.
Across the Atlantic, yep.
That's also hopefully the sound of you applauding another The Game Is About Glory pod this summer. If it isn't, feel free to applaud at any moment and send us a recording of it or something weird like that. Anyway, we will see you next week. There's doubtless going to be much more to discuss. And with my newly found internet toolkit, thank you, Milo, I should hopefully be able to emotionally navigate this week a lot better than I have been recently. I hope you do too. Anyway, thanks for joining us. And we'll both see you next week with someone else, I'm sure.
Someone else.
Okay. All right. See you later. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.